MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is brought to you by BetQL. BetQL is your home for the info that you need to make yourself a smarter better. NBA, college basketball, and the NHL, they've got you covered. Just go to BetQL.com, promo code SGP30. That's BetQL.com, promo code SGP30 for 30% off. We're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is the home for the avid sports bettor, providing insights, analysis, and free betting picks. Better Than Vegas, it's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our page so you don't miss a pick. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And finally, we're also brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge is like a stock exchange for sports bets, allowing you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. The best part is it allows you to bet with no vig. That's right, no vig betting that's legal in 40 states. Sign up at betteredge.com, promo code SGP, for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOREdge.com, promo code SGP.
Thank you for coming to the podcast. The MMA Gambling Podcast, a.k.a. Mediocre at Best, on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. I think we are going to change the name to Mediocre at Best because that's all you can expect when you tune in here. I am your host, Jeff Fox, and there's nothing I would rather do than in this time of season of love with Valentine's Day than to spend time with you degenerates and talk about people punching each other in the face. And I also would rather spend this time with no one else but my soulmate, my co-host, which I will introduce shortly. But nonetheless, like I said, I am Jeff Fox. I'm the host of this here program, if you want to call it that. This is episode 16. I am also a writer and editor at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Where you can read all my MMA stuff there. And I run the all-inclusive MMA site, MMA-manifesto.com. One of my helpers over there is my MMA soulmate, my co-host of this podcast also. He also hosts the Top Turtle MMA podcast and the Prelim Picker podcast. Some people call him the Herb Dean of making smart, quick decisions. He is Daniel, the Hillbilly Beaver. Freeland.
The Hillbilly Beaver. I know that that's an inside joke, and I remember it by email, and I'm trying to remember the origin. Is it because I'm busy like a beaver?
Yeah, I believe I said, yeah, the busy beavers get the most work, and I also said since you grew up like on a mountain in a cabin or whatever your
background. That's my origin.
That's my origin story.
I grew up in a cabin with no internet, which is why now that I have it, I overthink all of my picks.
There you go. We were mediocre last week, which was an improvement, actually, a step up for us. We both went 5-4 at UFC 258. Dan squeaked out the money win. He lost a little less money than I did. And overall, I'm inching closer to back to that 500 mark. I'm hoping to get right up to that 60% mark or so, which is where I've been since the start of 2020. So I'm at 24-29. Dan is at 18-35. Like I said, we both went 5-4 last week at UFC 258. Fights fell out, got canceled, switched around after we had recorded. I will mention in my column on the Sports Gambling Podcast, .com. I did have Chris Gutierrez beating Andre Ewell, so I really have 6 wins. So I think I beat you there, Dan. Would you have picked?
I also definitely had Chris Gutierrez. I actually think he is a real sleeper pick at bantamweight too, because like, I mean, apart from the sort of grappling loss he had to Cody Durden, he is on a 5-fight unbeaten streak. You know, you have to call it unbeaten because he did have that one draw in there. And the only loss was like a short notice fight he took against Rayoni Barcelos, who's, you know, on the verge of being ranked as well. So, yeah, I've been big on Chris Gutierrez for a while. I also just kind of in general think that Andre Ewell's the type of guy who's only going to, like, catch subs on guys shooting in desperately or needs to outstrike them. In like that, it didn't seem like that was going to be possible with Gutierrez. So yeah, I was going to have Gutierrez too. I actually had him in a DraftKings lineup. So yeah, we'll call it both 6 and 4.
So were your DraftKings picks as mediocre as your rest of your picks?
Yeah, basically, and we can get into the nitty gritty of it, but basically Rodolfo Vieira sunk all of them.
That's true. Yeah, he was the DraftKings column I wrote for Sports Gambling Podcast once again. I had Vieira. He was my top money choice, and yeah, that didn't go over so well. I was looking over. We didn't hit any underdogs. I don't think neither of us hit any underdogs last week, so that's why we're down money. If you're gonna bet on every 100 bucks in every fight, like which we claim you should, the only way you're gonna win money is if you hit the underdogs on the fight card. There were underdogs that came through, but we didn't have any of them, of course. Whoever beat Mallory Vienna, beat Mallory Martin. That was an underdog. The aforementioned Vieira, Rodolfo Vieira, Anthony Hernandez, what was he at? He was
negative or plus 300, I think, or something close to 300, maybe even a little higher.
Plus I interrupted 315 when we recorded. And then go ahead with the prop.
The sub prop was plus 3,000.
Yeah. you got to think prop. Someone probably hit that. You got to think someone even. Even putting 10 bucks on that, you would have you'd be laughing today. But so yeah, we missed that. We missed that underdog also. That's the thing. Underdogs are coming through. We're just not getting them for you, people.
Not a lot in this past week though. You know, because you mentioned those two, but apart from that, it was chalk all the way through.
Yeah, looks like that was it. We almost hit Mackie Pitolo. He was 43 seconds away from hitting us the plus 150. And then he got himself tapped out by a Cuban missile.
Yeah, and that was the interesting part of that one, too, was I feel like while some of these fights we got right, this one I feel like while we got wrong, we actually predicted it better in a lot of ways because he seemed to land the bigger shots. He seemed to look better striking. He seemed to make use of knowing that Julian Marquez was rusty. But then, like, I guess the weird part of that is the sub game of Julian Marquez is I think something we're just maybe sleeping a little bit on. Because not only did he get that choke, he was looking for him earlier. And I think people forget, too, that's his second submission win in a row. Well, not – I mean, there's a loss sandwiched in between them. But, like, he also choked out Darren Stewart. So maybe we need to stop thinking of him as a big power puncher and think that this dude's got some legit chokes.
Yeah, he may need a new nickname. I don't know. I don't off the top of my head. I don't have any Cuban choke nicknames. But yeah, someone come up with a new nickname because missiles don't choke. I don't think. I think missiles explode.
You could get something. Maybe there's something there with submarine missiles. I gotta think about it.
But sure. Yes. Yep.
There's
something there. Yeah. Other than that. I guess we can start off on the top of the card. I got the pick right. You technically, like you assumed, you not assumed, you gun to your head, proverbial gun to your head, you had Kamaru Usman winning the fight also, but you thought Burns at plus 215 was worth the gamble. And in the first round, it did seem like it was going to pay off for you because he rocked the champ with a big overhand right. I think that's the only time we've ever seen Usman in trouble, right?
That's definitely the only time I've ever seen him look like he was in for real trouble. I'll also say this, too, which is really interesting, is he said afterwards that he thought, you know, sort of the biggest problem he had was that he rushed in and got over-aggressive. But I would actually say that I don't think that was wrong, right? Like, I don't think he should have fought that any other way. Ultimately, it was unsuccessful. But I don't think you hit Usman and you back away and you just hope you're going to hit him later. The dude adjusts so well. The dude has got so many tools in the toolbox. When you hit him, you have to make use of it. And I think Gilbert tried that and did it as well as he could. You know, ultimately, like I said, not successful. But, like, he proved that price tag at plus two, you know, what did you say, 215, I think he was. Like that's a reasonable price tag based on where he performed. I actually think he probably, despite the fact he didn't make it to the fifth round like Colby did, I actually think he put up a better fight against Kamaru Usman than Colby did. You know, and obviously, you know, that it's going to take him a while to get back to a title shot or anything like that. But, you know, down the road, I would definitely be here for a rematch between those two.
Right. And I mentioned the elephant in the room earlier, Herb Dean. Every week he's good for podcast fodder, at least. I don't think it was a bad stoppage. Burns did get hit a lot, but it's more he was doing his old twinkle toes, dancing around, almost falling on top of the fighter, not knowing when he should really step into to stop the fight routine again. Like I said, I don't think the stoppage was that horrible, but it's just his whole thought process behind it seems to be still really flawed.
Yeah, and I would say this about it too, is that like if he had stopped it when he first ran in, nobody complains. If he had stayed away and watched as Burns took extra damage and then he stopped it, nobody would complain. But it's like that in between where like you're almost on the verge of influencing the fight. And like what would happen if Usman had jumped off of him and let Burns recover, which is kind of like what we saw with Amanda Ribas a couple weeks ago. You know, not that she fully recovered, she just took a beating again. But, you know, it seems wrong that he just, if you're going to pull the trigger, dude. Don't just stand there with your finger on it.
I know what would have happened. He would have shrugged like he did last time when it happened. I don't want to, there's no need to beat a dead horse here, but it's like I said a few podcasts back, it's like an aging fighter. He knows what to do, but he can't pull the trigger anymore. It seems to be the case with him for some reason. But like I said, the stoppage wasn't horrible. It was just the whole act of getting to that spot. Co-main event, Dan made me look dumb. He got Alexa Grasso, who looked fantastic. Macy Barber looked not fantastic, the opposite of fantastic. She was fighting the invisible man, it looked like, the whole fight. She was about, 150 feet away from Grasso and throwing fancy spin kicks and jabs.
the fancy spin kicks, whatever. Like, you cover ground with those. You don't cover ground with the jab. Like, and I'm no striking expert. I'm not going to sit here and pretend I am. But, like, she came out. They had not even, like, touched gloves yet. And she fired off two jabs from about 15 feet away. And I'm like, that isn't serving any purpose, right? Except for, like, UFC stats has to now log that. And, like, I didn't look at UFC stats after it, but it has to, if they were actually counting every time she thought she was throwing a punch, they have to have, like, 385 strikes attempted by Macy Barber and, like, 52 landed.
Yeah, it was... I think she is the classic bully fighter, that she needs to be the one bullying her opponent and needs to be the one in control and aggressive. And if the opponent doesn't wilt and if the opponent hits back, then it's an issue, it seems.
Yeah, and you see that a lot with really athletic fighters on the regional circuit too, right? Like, she fought in LFA, which is a high-level organization, but being like a hyper-athletic 21-year-old, like, it's really easy to get by on that, right? Like, it's really easy, and I don't mean to say really easy, but when you are that athletic and you are that good and you're fighting regional level competition, it's much easier to just kind of bully your opponent and be that bully. And I think she's finding now that that doesn't work. And you know, to the credit of Grasso, not only did she not let Barber bully her, but she, like, gave it back to her, right? Like, she swept her. She wound up on top. She was the one putting Barber against the cage, like, and for Barber, who that's like her best attribute, you have to worry about what that says about where her trajectory is right now, right? Because, like, if you're, you know, her goal is to be champion by the end of this year, which is obviously not happening and nobody thought it was happening anyway, but if your thought is like, I need to keep pushing for a title, and granted, she's, you know, in her early 20s, she's got plenty of time to change. But she needs to change, right? Like, this is a sign on the wall that, like, there needs to be, like, wholesale changes in her game, because if you can't bully a woman who was in the 115-pound division, you know, 4 months ago, like, you're going to have some trouble with people who look like Valentina Shevchenko, you know? Like, that's you know, just a fact.
Yep. And we shouldn't harp on Barber too much, because it was basically Grasso was the star of that show, and she Yeah, she impressed me. She may finally be putting it all together at age 27. That's her first time she's won back to back fights in the UFC, and hopefully it's onward and upward for her.
Yeah, and I think that, and I've said this a couple of times too, and I said it even last week. I think it has a lot to do with the division she's in. You know, she had trouble with those wrestlers at 115 pounds, and everybody thought, you know, oh, she's going up a weight class. The wrestlers are even stronger up there. It's going to be even more difficult. That may be true, but she also is not emaciated anymore when she comes off the scale and she's trying to rehydrate to a level that makes her, you know, back to her athleticism. Instead, she has the ability to put that on others now. And I think, you know, I'm really excited for her at 125 pounds. I'd love to see her with a step up against somebody like, you know, hey, Roxanne Modafari took care of Macy Barber once. Let's see those two throw down, because I'd be interested to see how she does with that physicality.
Right. And plus, Grasso only has lost to basically killers in her former division. Carlos Barza, Tatiana Suarez, and, well, Felice Herrig isn't a killer, but she's a veteran, and this is what, four years ago, so no shame in that. So yeah, I'm running upward for her, hopefully. Kelvin Gastelum looked like he got his mojo back last night, we won't say last night because we're definitely not taping this. This is live, what you're listening to right now. he got his mojo back against Ian Heinisch and grappled his way to a decision victory.
Yeah, and I think saying he's got his mojo back is somewhat true, but also, you know, he fought three guys in a row that are all five of the best guys in the division, clearly. You know, and I said it a little bit last week, this fight won't tell us a lot. He's got wins over guys who are lower than him and losses to guys above him. You know, and there's really no telling where he fits because those guys are so far apart, right? Israel Adesanya is not close to Ian Heinisch. You know, where Jacare Souza is right now is not close to Jack Hermanson or Darren Till. So, you know, we need something to see a little bit more where he's at. But, yeah, it was nice to see him back on the winning track because, hey, that would have been four in a row. Certainly with a loss to number 15 and four in a row, certainly would have raised the question in this time where they're cutting people with expensive contracts if Kelvin Gastelum was worth it anymore. So, yeah, that's a big win for him in a couple of ways.
No doubt. Ricky Simon looked good. He made Brian Kelleher look really, really gross. He was spurting blood. Looked like he wanted to quit, but kudos to him for sticking in there in that fight. Bilal Muhammad looked good. Remember his name, everyone. Overall, it was the greatest nickname ever. Remember his name. I think we've probably touched on all the fights that we really need to say much about, but I want to circle back to the main event. What do you think is next for Kamaru Usman? He says, of course, he's calling out the big money fights. He wants Jorge Masvidal, which we've already saw, which we don't need to see again, but there really is no obvious next opponent for him, is there? Or maybe there is. Maybe you have one in mind.
I don't. And, you know, he did say Jorge Masvidal, and then in the post-fight presser, I don't know if somebody asked him about it or if he brought it up himself, but he mentioned GSP, that like it would be interesting to fight GSP. I think here's the thing I will say. If he wants one of those big money fights right now, you're right. It's maybe time for one of those because there is no clear-cut number one contender, right? Like, you know, Burns doesn't deserve an instant rematch. Do you give Colby Covington one after, you know, beating Tyrone Woodley by exploding rib? Maybe, but, like, I'm not sure I'm ready to see that again either. You know, I don't want to see Masvidal again. You know, like, I think that's probably one of the lamer matchups you can make. You know, Wonderboy's on a two-fight win streak, but against Vicente Luque and Jeff Neal, guys floating right around the number 10 in the division, so... Yeah, like, I don't know necessarily that there's a good answer for who he fights next. So if he wants one of those mega fights, you know, now would be the time. I actually think the answer, and this, you know, is obviously contingent upon Dana continuing to dangle crap in front of us, but the obvious answer here, if you want a Kamaru Usman big money fight, is Khabib. If you could get Khabib to come back, that is the fight to make. because both of them have just, like, such dominant grappling. Both of them, you know, look great with the punches. They're both the guys who've spent the least amount of time on their backs throughout their course of their careers. Like, it would be an amazing fight, and, like, now is the right time to make it with no clear-cut contender. But, of course, that's contingent upon, you know, Dana's dream of Khabib not actually being retired, which you could say the same thing about GSP. So I think probably what winds up happening is you wind up seeing some matchups happen before Usman is booked again, and hopefully one of those, you know, helps us see what's happening. You know, maybe Masvidal finally does fight Colby Covington and gets wrestled for 25 minutes, and then we get the Colby Covington rematch that is actually deserved. Or, you know, maybe, man, I didn't even mention Leon Edwards. That's kind of wrong. But maybe Leon Edwards fights for the first time in 31 years, and maybe he sets himself apart. So regardless of what it is, I hope they just let some fights happen and then book the worthiest contender.
Right. If you're going at this point, I think worthiest contender would be Edwards, but he's been out for a long time, or Wonderboy Thompson. Maybe have those two fight and the winner gets Usman. But obviously, like, the dream scenario would be either, like, two people you mentioned, GSP or Khabib. Dana, Khabib doesn't seem to want to come back, and Dana seems to not want GSP to come back. There's a reason why he's mentioning that Usman's definitely going to end up better than GSP ever was. He's going to have a better career than GSP, like, making statements like that. It's not a coincidence that he's making statements like that, because I don't think GSP is on his Christmas card list at this point.
No, I don't think so either.
So that concludes that mediocre card for us. 5-4, I guess that's a bit better than mediocre, right?
Above average.
Exactly, above average. We got a big card to break down this week for you. Before that, maybe we should tell you about some of our sponsors that haven't done that yet. Let me turn on my brand new phone I got here, folks, with our ads on it. I think the first one we're going to do is BetQL. Yes, indeed. If you want to get an advantage over the sportsbook, then you're going to want to download BetQL. It's the only app you need to make smart bets. Let me see what we got here. They have sharp data for college basketball, NBA, NHL, and a bunch of other sports. I don't think they have MMA yet, but maybe that's something they'll have to look into in the future. If you want the inside edge on who the pros are backing, then you need to check out BetQL. They have tons of sportsbook offers for your state. You can head over to the App Store or Google Play and download BetQL. I was checking out that this morning on their app, and they had like a NBA. Yeah, I believe it was NBA pick that was they're 90% accurate on, which is pretty crazy. So, and basically all their picks are all like 60% in that range there, but I saw one that was 90. So you're going to want to head over to BetQL.com, enter the code SGP30, and you get 30% off your first subscription. So that's promo code SGP30 at BetQL.com. All right, which brings us to UFC Fight Night, Blades versus Lewis. I should get this out of the way. The poster for this event, Curtis Blades, his nipples really distracted me. I have to say that. There's something going on. I don't know what the deal is, but it's very distracting. Have you seen the poster, Dan?
I just pulled it up when you said that, and yeah, whoever's in the graphics department needs to be fired.
Yeah, it's very. I know we're on Valentine's Day and all, but I don't need to see that. So anyhow, so we got Blades versus Lewis, two big heavyweight boys. That's February 20th, so this coming Saturday at the UFC Apex, as per usual, in Las Vegas, Nevada. The main card is on ESPN Plus. Prelims are also on ESPN Plus. Let me get you a start time for this. That's what I forgot to look up. It won't be one of those wonky overseas start times, so it should be people in North America should be decent after. So 8:00 Eastern is the main card, and 5 p.m. are the prelims. So hopefully you won't have to stay up too late to watch it. We will start, as per usual, with the early part of the prelims. This match was just added, featherweight belt, Rafael, I guess it would be, Alves versus Pat Sabatini. Making his debut, you see, he's on short notice. He's the champ. Was it Cage Warriors he's the champ from, or no? CFFC?
CFFC, yeah, right. CFFC. Okay.
So he does have championship experience on the regional scene. He's 13-3 as a pro. 2 knockouts, 9 submissions. So he's a submission guy. He has got an inch of reach, slight reach on Alves. He's won 2 straight fights, 5 of his last 6. He's at plus 150 heading into this one. Short notice fighters do not fare too well. I should put that out there. That's why I mentioned this is short notice for him. I believe he just took the fight a little over a week before he's actually going to be stepping into the cage, about a week and a half, perhaps. As for Alves, he's 19-9 as a pro, 7 knockouts, 7 submissions, so well-rounded guy. He will also be making his debut. He has fought on the Contender Series, and he won his fight there. He's won 5 straight fights. He's at minus 208. What can you tell us about either of these guys since they're both debuting?
So one of the things I will tell you about Sabatini is he's a guy who tends to lean a little bit on his wrestling and his ability to control fighters. That's what I've seen from his work in CFFC. I've seen a little grounded pound, seen an arm bar here and there. You know, and he's got decent wrestling. The problem with that against a guy like Alves here is that he's just so good at cutting off the cage and putting you in a place where if you're going to shoot that takedown, it's going to be a desperation one. And I think that that's a real problem here for Sabatini is that he's going to be backed up regularly against the cage unless he meets Alves right in the middle of the cage and throws absolute bombs. And I don't think that's a fight he wins because Alves is very strong. He throws big, heavy shots when he does throw them. And I will also say this, Alves has got one of the better guillotines I've seen recently. He snatches that thing up so fast. He did it on the Contender Series. He's done it on the regional circuit back in Titan and a couple of other good organizations he's fought for. So, you know, you got a wrestler, you got a guy who's good at submissions. That's not a good lineup there for Sabatini. Right. And in addition to that, too, I also think Alves just has a striking advantage. So I like Alves a lot in this fight.
All right, I will go with you on that one then. This was one of the ones I was up in the air, but yeah, the breakdown makes it seem pretty clear that Alves is the choice, and he seems just basically looking at his record, he seems like the more rounded fighter of the two. So we will go with chalk there. Next fight, heavyweights, get ready, everyone. Hashtag chunky guy. We need like our production people need to put. We need some kind of theme song or an alarm or something for chunky guy alarm. But we have a couple of chunky guys going out of here. This is the fight we actually broke down, weeks ago? I'm not sure. Do you remember how long
December,
ago it was?
December, I think it was.
December, really? Okay.
December.
All right, and it fell through at that point. We'll go through it quickly again. Jared Vanderaw. He is making his debut. He is also a Dana White Contender Series alum. He's won 2 straight fights, 5 of his last 6. He has 11 pro wins, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions. He has an inch of height and 2 inches of reach on Sergei Spivak. He's a plus 185 currently. Spivak, also hashtag chunky guy, 11-2 as a pro, 2-2 in the UFC. He's one of those win-one-lose-one type of guys. Doesn't seem to get a streak going. He's 3 years younger than his opponent. He's at minus 225. Originally, we both had Spivak as our pick. I'm going to stick with him. I have no reason to change. Has your thought on this changed at all?
No, and as a matter of fact, I think Carlos Felipe's last performance actually gave me even more faith in Spivak because not that Felipe looked good. I actually thought he lost that fight against Justin Taffa, but he looked good enough for me to note that if Spivak stymied him for as long as he did, clearly he's got some chops. And with Vandera, I love Vandera. I think he's a fun fighter. He's got probably some of the more interesting jiu-jitsu in the heavyweight division right now. I just don't think in this fight he has any way of getting it there, and I think he's at a disadvantage on the feet. I think he's probably going to wind up pressed against the cage for the vast majority of this fight, hoping to kind of clinch and take him down, but then he's going to get reversed and pressed against the cage. And Spivak's really good at that. He even did it a little bit to Marcin Tybura, who's a tough grappler. So I don't think, Vandera is better than Tybura in that regard. So I'm going with Spivak. And again, this is another one I feel pretty confident in.
There you go. We're both going with chalk again. So be back. Another brings us to another fight, which we already broke down a few weeks back. Bantamweight rescheduled bout. Iman Zahabi, a fellow Canadian of mine, who I would like to pick against my fellow Canadians. He's fighting Draco Rodriguez. We will go with Zahabi. He's lost two straight fights. He's won one of his last three. Last fought in May of 2019. He's at plus 170 currently. Rodriguez, he's got inch of reach, 9 years younger, grappling stats in his favor. He's 7-1 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions. He will be making his debut. He also fought on the Dana White's Contender Series at minus 210. At the time, I had him, and I'm going to stick with him, and you had Zahabi, and you're going to tell me why you still have him, probably.
Yeah, I'm going to stay with him, too. And again, you can go back and listen to our old breakdown of it if you want. You know, I think, again, this is another one that was scheduled for either early January or late. I'm looking right now. This is the last card of December, so this is another December card, one that got revisited. I think the thing about Zahabi is a lot of people see that long layoff. A lot of people see those back-to-back losses. But one of those losses, he was winning. He was beating Ricardo Hamosh. And then in addition to that, too, you know, the long layoff is alarming for a lot of guys. But knowing that he lives in the gym with his brother, who happens to be one of the greatest trainers of all time, gives me a little bit more confidence in that giant layoff. In addition to that, I'm just not real high on Draco Rodriguez. He picked up a takedown in his debut, but then was almost immediately swept, which is alarming, especially for a guy who's got good jiu-jitsu like Zahabi. And yeah, he wound up with the submission, but he kind of just fell into it too after almost being omoplotted. So I'm going to go here with Zahabi. I think he's got, especially with the underdog money, I think he's got a good chance to prove to people once again that he's not, you know, just, you know, somebody's brother. He is actually a very legitimate bantamweight.
All right, so Dan's catching his first L of the night there. Enjoy it when I'll enjoy rubbing that in his face when the time comes. Before we break down some more, let's tell you about a fun site that we have been using here at SGP. It's betterland.vegas. Betterland.vegas, it's just like YouTube, but it's for what hashtag degens only care about, which would be sports betting, of course. Best part of the site is you get free video picks from the SGPN crew. Make sure you subscribe to our page. So that would be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. Then you won't miss on any videos. If you're subscribed, you get a notification every time one of us posts a video. I posted last week. I think I gave you one winner out of the three picks I put on there. So there you go. I'll have another video coming up this week with only winners, I promise. So make sure you go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV to subscribe to our Better Than Vegas page. So sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. All right, let's go to what weight class are we talking next? Let's talk featherweights. Chaz Skelly, Jamal Emmers. Let's talk about them. Chaz Skelly, 18-3 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 10 submissions. He's 7-3 in the UFC, 3-0 in Bellator, so he's got a lot of high-level experience. Won his last fight, but that was way back in September of 2019. He's an inch taller than Emmers. He's at plus 170 currently as of this recording. As for Emmers, 18-5 as a pro, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions. 1-1 in the UFC. He dropped his debut, then won his last fight. He also was on Contender Series, but he lost that fight. That was his only fight he's lost in the past 6. He's 5-1. 2 inches of reach on Skelly, 4 years younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor. He's minus 210, and I sadly am taking chalk again in this one.
Yeah, I'm taking chalk again here, and I like Chaz Skelly too, but it's worth noting that Jamal Emmers is just, he's really great at defending the takedown. You know, you mentioned that reach in there. His reach is pretty long for the division. And Chaz Skelly, who's got long arms for the division too, is still going to be at a reach disadvantage. I actually think Emmers in that fight with Giga Chikadze, who's now, you know, basically ranked in that division. He might actually be in the rankings at this point. I actually think a lot of people saw it the same way as I did and thought he won that fight. So, you know, we're talking about a guy who's, you know, just on the cusp of being one of the better featherweights out there, and Skelly is going to have to wrestle him up in order to do it. You know, with Emmers showing that he's got good takedown defense both in his UFC fights and before that, I just like him here to probably defend enough takedowns and win what will probably be a pretty fun striking battle.
He being Emers, has 100% takedown defense in the octagon. So that includes Contender Series plus his two regular fights. So it's only three attempts, but still, he's never been taken down. So we are both going with Mr. Emers in this one. I mentioned to Dan off air that breaking down this card, I came across quite a few fights where I wanted to pick both fighters to lose. I'm not going to name any names. Let's talk about our next fight. That would be Shayna Dobson versus who's she fighting? Casey O'Neill. So it's women's flyweight bout. What I said before has nothing to do with this fight at all. Dobson, the veteran, if you want to call her that, she's fought eight pro fights. She's 4-4 as a pro. Two knockouts, 2-3 in the UFC. She won her last fight via TKO, a fight that at least I had wrong. I'm not sure if you had it. More than likely you had it wrong too, because you have most of your fights wrong. So she has won one fight in her last four, and that would have been it, the last fight. She's plus 140 against the debuting O'Neill. 5-0 as a pro, one knockout, one submission, 8 years younger than Dobson. Minus 170. What can you tell us about O'Neill and this matchup?
So I can tell you a little bit about her. I've seen some of her fights. Eternal MMA doesn't really post very much, so that's the majority of her background. But UAE Warriors, if you go on YouTube, you can see their whole event. So I did see her last fight, which I'm going to be honest. She wins it by ground and pound. It almost seems like the person she's fighting like trips and falls and winds up on the bottom and then looks like a fish out of water there. So like it doesn't show me anything about her wrestling. It doesn't really show me anything about her control on top, because the person she's fighting almost seems like she doesn't know how to be there. And before that, I wasn't actually very confident in what I saw out of her striking. Her striking actually looks kind of slow, to be completely honest. It doesn't look like it's UFC-level speed, which sort of makes sense. She's 5-0. You know, she's on the younger side. She's only 23. I think she's probably got a lot of promise, which is probably why the UFC is putting her against Shayna Dobson, who, again, while she took out a prospect in her last time, is like the right test for a 5-0 fighter who hasn't really been pushed yet. With that being said, I still think Dobson is probably too much here for Casey O'Neill, because while Dobson, like I said, you know, she's not the best flyweight in the UFC by any stretch of the imagination, she does box pretty well. She does look good when she's on the feet, and I just don't see O'Neill being able to, like, you know, just luck her way into a takedown here against Dobson. So I'm going to take Dobson at the dog money, especially because, like you said at the beginning, or you were hinting at the beginning, or you were not hinting at the beginning.
No, I wasn't hinting.
You almost don't think either of these two are going to win or worthy of a win in the octagon right now. And if that's the case, why not go with the plus money, right? Like, if we're going to make a pick and we're going to put $100 on every fight like we always do, you might as well put the $100 on the person who, first of all, has more octagon experience, has fought tougher opponents, and second of all, I mean, like, you're getting the better return on it.
Right. Good enough for me. Let's both take an underdog here, because this looks like this card's really chalky for me. So let's go with Dobson. Brings us to the next fight, is a pick'em on the board currently. They're both at minus 115. That would be featherweights Julian Arosa, Nate Landwehr. Landwehr, 14-3 as a pro, 8 knockouts. He's 1-1 in the UFC. He's won 8 of his 9 past 9 fights, striking in his favor. Like I said, minus 115. Juicy J, I believe, is Arosa's nickname, which is kind of gross, but that's his nickname nonetheless. That's a reason not to pick him right there. 24-8 as a pro, 10 knockouts, 11 submissions. So that's very impressive. He is a finisher. He's should be I've noted of his 8 losses, 4 of them are via knockout or TKO. He's 2-4 on the UFC. This is his third kick in the can at the UFC. He won his last fight to start off his third stint here. So basically that's another way of saying he's been cut twice already. So overall, I believe I said he's 2-4 in the UFC. He also was in the Ultimate Fighter house. He's 3-1 there. He also was in Dana White's Contender Series. He won his fight there. So he's basically been all their properties he's been on. He's won 2 straight fights, including his most recent re-entry to the UFC Octagon. He's got 4 inches of height, 2 inches of reach, and he's 1 year younger than his opponent. Grappling stats are also in his favor. He's at -115. I think I like Landwehr in this one, in this pick 'em fight.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Landwehr too on this one, mostly because, you know, the thing about Landwehr is he's pretty freaking tough.
Yeah.
And if you look at Juicy J's resume, it even sounds dirty to say. If you look at Juicy J's resume, you don't see a lot of fights where he is able to win a decision. Because he's not got a lot of great output. You know, he kind of goes for the big strike or nothing kind of deal. And like, for that reason, he gets outworked by guys like Julio Arce, or he gets outworked by guys like Grant Dawson, or, you know, for nothing, he was getting outworked by Sean Woodson, too, before, you know, he caught Sean Woodson in a Darce choke. And he was getting outworked by Jamal Emmers on the Contender Series before, you know, he landed a big shot that ultimately, you know, knocked Emmers out. You know, if you go back, he got knocked out by Artem Lobov in no time. You know, he got knocked out by Teruto Ishihara, who I used to really like, but is no longer with the UFC. So I think Landwehr has enough power that he could knock Juicy out. And I think also, should this go to decision, I think Landwehr is just going to put more volume on him, as he did against Darren Elkins and ultimately took that fight.
There you go. Let us not say Juicy J ever again. let's move on to a lot of lightweights, lighter weight fights in the undercard. Bantamweights, Eddie Wineland, John Castaneda. So we've got a younger guy against a veteran here. Castaneda we'll start with. He's 17-5 as a pro, 6 knockouts, 6 submissions. He lost his UFC debut. He's only won one fight in his last 4, and that would have been on the Contender Series. 2 inches of reach on Wineland, 7 years younger. This is a pick 'em fight. He's at -115. Wineland, 24-14 as a pro, 15 knockouts, 4 submissions. He's only won once in his last 4 also. He got knocked out his last fight. He's 6-8 in the UFC. He'd be an inch taller, but he's given up the reach. Grappling stats in his favor, -115. I'm leaning to Castaneda, but I don't really know too much about him, so we'll see what you have to say, and then I may change.
Yeah, it's first of all, I'm also going to pick Castaneda here. And the worry for me is, you're right, that 1-3 looks so bad, especially when you consider 2 of them not in the UFC, right? And so, like, not lower level competition, because it's in Combate. One of them's a split decision, and you know, he looked pretty good in that split decision too. But like, I just don't see Eddie Wineland being the type of person who's gonna go in there and slug it out with Castaneda for a long period of time. And that's really what Castaneda does. He goes in there and slugs. We saw him even land on, he didn't take any rounds off of Nathaniel Wood, but he did go in there and he landed early on Nathaniel Wood. And I don't know if Eddie Wineland is going to, you know, try to technically outbox him, but I just don't think Castaneda is going to let him fight that kind of fight. He's just going to try to go in there, guns a-blazing, just absolutely trying to pour on the pressure. And I'm just not sure at this point in time in his career Eddie Wineland has that. It's also worth noting that Castaneda has a ton of submissions on his record. You know, he's the type of guy who maybe mixes in the wrestling here. And Wineland's got good defensive takedowns, and he's good at staying on his feet to force the boxing match. But at least, like, putting that fear into his mind while he's being crazy pressured, it adds another layer here to Castaneda. So I really don't like this fight from a betting perspective. It's a pick 'em for a reason. But if I'm picking somebody, I'm picking Castaneda here.
Right. I think going against the older fighter who just got knocked out also in a pick 'em fight is probably the right move, which I'm sure will be proven. It'll be proven otherwise when it comes right down to it. But well, we try to make smart picks. We can't help what the MMA gods do, and whether they smile on us or not come fight night. Lightweights, Dracar Close, Luis Violent Bob Ross Pena. Pena is 8-3 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions, 4-3 in the UFC. He's kind of fallen from grace. He was a bit of a he's got quite the personality and the look, and he seemed to be a rising star, but that star seems to have fallen quite a bit. His 4-3 record probably has a lot to do with that. He lost his last fight. He'll be taking this one on short notice. He will be 6 inches taller, 5 inches of reach. He's a very, very big featherweight, or lightweight, I'm sorry. He seems to always tower over his opponents. He's also 5 years younger. He's at +115. Close, it's more of a built more like a fire hydrant than Pena. He's not a chunky guy, I wouldn't say, but he's a solid dude. 11-2 as a pro, 4 knockouts, 5-2 in the UFC. He got knocked out his last fight, which is a little worrisome. Striking stats in his favor, he's around -156 at this point. Despite him being knocked out, I'm taking him in this fight.
Yeah, I'm taking him in this fight too. You know, you said somebody being recently knocked out is one of our triggers that, you know, you got to take a second look at it. Also, one of our things that we constantly track is people taking this fight on short notice, which is what Luis Pena is doing here. You know, this was originally supposed to be Closer versus Jai Herbert, which is a fight I liked a little bit more here because, you know, not for anything, I don't think Pena is going to stand there and bang with Dracar Closa. I mean, he definitely could work that exceedingly long jab and just sort of hide behind that and win a decision that way. But Pena's best attribute for me is his creative grappling, and I just don't think this ever goes to the ground unless Closa decides it does. It's also really worth noting that while Dracar Closa is coming off that knockout loss, he almost knocked out Benil Dariush in that fight. He had Dariush badly hurt. Dariush won comeback of the year on that fight. So, you know, obviously he had Dariush down enough. And we're talking about Dariush, who's now ranked in the top 10 in the UFC's lightweight division, which is one of the most stacked divisions. So I think while that knockout loss is definitely, you know, a little mark on his record, that fight is not a bad fight in the grand scheme of things for Closa. And hey, maybe even learn something about pouring it on. I think he's going to tag Pena here as much as he wants to, and ultimately he's probably going to finish him.
Closa is the pick. Featherweights. Don't worry, there's might be a lot of lighter weight classes in the prelims, but we've got some hashtag chunky guys coming up again. The main card is chock full of them. Featherweights, Danny Chavez, Jared Gordon. We will start with, let's start with Gordon. 16-4 as a pro, 6 knockouts, 2 submissions. All of his 4 losses are via knockout, so that's something to keep in mind. He's 4-3 in the UFC. He won his last fight. He has an inch of height, inch of reach, and 1 year younger than Chavez. He's at -105, so he's a slight underdog in this one. Chavez, 11-3 as a pro, 3 knockouts. He won his UFC debut, which is part of a 4-fight winning streak. Grappling stats in his favor, -125. What are you thinking in this one?
I'm all over Danny Chavez, and at this -125 number, I will point out, if you are listening to this right now and you like the idea of betting Danny Chavez, go do it right now, because his number is constantly getting barked up and up and up as people bet on him. If you looked at it as early as last week, you would have seen him at +120. That's right. He marked as the underdog when these lines opened, and since then has been bet up so much that he's now at -125 as the favorite. And the reason is really simple, is that if you go back and watch his debut fight, he is incredibly impressive. I was blown away when I went back and rewatched it, because I was like, I remember the name Danny Chavez, but like not well enough. So I went back and watched his fight. His kicks are so fast. He's an explosive striker, and his sprawls and the way that he stops takedowns is really impressive. So I loved him in his debut. He looked really good, and he looked really good, not for anything too, but against a guy who can wrestle a little bit in TJ Brown, right? Like, TJ Brown is not a bad wrestler. So, like, yeah, here he gets a guy who probably wrestles a little bit better than TJ Brown. Maybe not even. And I think ultimately is going to be way slower on the feet than Chavez. So not only am I on Chavez here, I'm all over him, especially at -125. Get him there before he's -150 or 170 by the time this fight rolls around.
All right, I'm sold. Chavez is the pick there. To our prelim main event middleweights. A fight we broke down also a few weeks back. It was supposed to be the first card of the year, so starting in January. Middleweights, like I said, Phil Haas, Nazarudin Imavov. This is awesome fight, so we got a lot of tough ones or a lot of close ones on the board this week. Haas, 9 pro wins, 7 knockouts, 2 submissions, 2 inches of reach on Imavov. He's 1-1 in the UFC. He also was 1-1 on Dana White's Contender Series. And as I said, he's -115. Imavov, 9 wins, 3 knockouts, 4 submissions, 3 inches taller than Haas, 6 years younger. Small sample size, but striking stats are in his favor. He's 1-0 in the UFC. And as I said, for the third time now, this is a pick 'em fight, -115. And we originally had Imavov. I'm sticking with mine. I take it you're probably sticking with yours too.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Imovov too here. The thing about Imovov is he fights really well from a range. He does not tax himself out. He is a very safe striker who is dangerous with the counters. And he's fighting a guy who's overly aggressive and who gasses himself out. I mean, like, that's a recipe for disaster for Phil Haas. I mean, if you look back at Phil Haas's entire career, with the exception of his pro MMA debut, the guy has never won a fight that got out of the second round. And if you look at any time he's fought anybody with a skill level that, you know, is sort of worth talking about, most of the guys who are able to get him to the second round have him so tired that they finish him. You know, Julian Marquez had him up against the cage. He looked exhausted in the second round. He got head kicked into oblivion. Luis Taylor, back when World Series of Fighting was called World Series of Fighting, wore him out for a round and then choked him out. Go back to him not getting into the Ultimate Fighter house. And, you know, he fought Andrew Sanchez, got exhausted at the end of that fight and just taken down by Andrew Sanchez. So you're fighting a guy who has good energy management, who's good at countering people who are overly aggressive. I mean, like, I actually think Imovov is probably being vastly underrated here against Haas, because I think this will get to the second and Imovov will start being incredibly dangerous at that time.
There we go. We are sticking with that. We're agreeing with each other far too much, but I guess we did last week too, and we ended up fairly good. So maybe that's a good thing. As we usually do on this show, we bring you the main card, hashtag ad free. So that means I have to better tell you about our final sponsor before we hit that. That would be Better Edge, BTTOR Edge. Better Edge is a stock exchange for sports bets, which allows you to buy and sell betting positions just like the stock market. Best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. You can play for money in 40 states. Plus, currently they are doing a weekly college basketball contest on Wednesdays and Saturdays. $10 to enter, and each user will start with a balance of 1,000 Edge coins to wager on the games. Player with the highest earnings will take the entire pool of entry fees, so it's like a battle royal, winner take all. Find the link under the competitions tab on their site. Sign up today at betteredge.com and use the promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOREdge.com, promo code SGP. Basically, everywhere you are, use the promo code SGP. I hear you can get 2-for-1 colonoscopies with that code. So it's basically, it's the way to go. Right? You want to take them up on that offer, Dan?
I'm good. I think I'm still too young to need all of that.
All right. I may be lying about that also. Who knows? Main card. Anyway, Dan's boyfriend, which is fitting since this is right around Valentine's Day. Dan's boyfriend is in the opening card here. Dan loves Andre Arlovsky, and he is fighting Tom Espinal. Let's tell you about Arlovsky, and then Dan will tell you why he's picking him. He's 30-19 as a pro, 17 knockouts, 3 submissions. He's 19-13 in the UFC. This is his second or third stint? Second stint, I think, only in the UFC? Or is this his third? Do you know?
I think this is 3, but I can't tell you for certain, because I know there was the World Series of Fighting run in there. There was a Strikeforce run in there.
Yeah.
I don't know if we're back to back, but yeah.
He is back. He's won 2 straight fights also in the UFC. He's more than back. He's looked really good. He's won 3 of his last 4 fights. He's at plus 210. He's one of those guys, like we were saying about Andre Arlovsky, who we were wrong about, but he's one of those guys who has changed his game and is not getting himself knocked out anymore like he used to. So something to note here. He will be fighting Aspinall, who's 9-2 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 1 submission. He's won 2 straight UFC fights, so he's 2-0 in the UFC. There's his only fight he's had in the big show. He's won 5 straight fights, and all of them have been a form of knockout or TKO. 2 inches taller, 1 inch reach, 14 years younger. Striking stats in his favor, minus 270. I'm obviously taking him. Dan is going to tell you why he's taking Arlovsky at plus 210, even though he's going to be wrong.
I'm definitely taking Arlovsky at negative 210. The reason's simple, though, because let me get this straight. First of all, I've always picked Arlovsky in every single freaking fight he's ever had. He's always been underdog money. The last time he was a favorite, he fought Frank Mir. And I think that was 2014 or something like that. when he fought Frank Mir. So he's always coming in at dog money. But if you look at what Arlovsky has done well lately, and you mentioned the two-fight winning streak, I picked against him when he fought Tanner Boser because I thought Tanner Boser would be able to take it to him. And the thing he's done really well lately is fight guys who do a good job of knocking out their opponent early but aren't really great at going the distance, right? You know, Tanner Boser, when he fought Tanner Boser, had been on a winning streak, and Tanner Boser, when he fought Tanner Boser, had knocked out both of his last two opponents. Now, Felipe Lins, and he had knocked out Rafael Pessoa. And before that, Andrei Arlovsky fought Felipe Lins, another guy who was, you know, sort of heavily touted coming from Professional Fighters League, and he was coming off of four straight knockout finishes, including Jared Rochalt and Josh Copeland, who are, you know, UFC vets in their own right. So he's fighting these guys who are particularly good at, like, knocking people out fast, and what he's doing is he's just making them a point fight. And a lot of these heavyweights don't know how to do that, and that's sort of the beauty of what he's done under Mike Brown. Now you got him fighting Tom Aspinall, who literally only has finishes on his record. That's it. He went to decision one time in his amateur career, but apart from that, the dude goes in, and he slugs, and he tries to get the finish. If Arlovsky doesn't engage him in that kind of match and pick him apart, I could see this looking just like a Tanner Boser fight and seeing Andrei Arlovsky come out with a, you know, a really kind of lackluster 29-28 win. But at plus 210, I mean, why not try that?
I know why not. Do you know who's undefeated, Dan?
Who is undefeated?
Yes. Father Time is undefeated, Dan.
And I was Andrei like, I don't Arlovsky, think Tom Aspinall is.
Andrei Arlovsky, he's almost as old as I am. Not quite. Yeah, he just turned 42, so no, I won't be picking him. But you made you made it like you're picking with your head, which is all we can ask, Dan. We know you're really picking with your heart.
100% heart on this one. But hey, 210 is a great price on your heart.
Right. They were heavyweights, but neither of those guys were chunky guys. But let's move on to some chunky guys. Alexei Oleinik, Chris Dawkins. I don't think we're going to call Oleinik chunky, technically, because he's old. He's even older than Arlovsky. He's going to be 44 in the summer. And he's not overly chunky. But that's and he's a nice guy. We don't want to insult the man. Let's break him down. 59-14-1 is his pro MMA record. Yeah, that's insane. Here's something even more insane. 8 knockouts. That's not much. 46 submission wins. 46 times he's tapped out his opponent. That's insane. 8-5 in the UFC. He lost his last fight. Before that, he had won two straight. Before that, he had lost two straight. So basically, he's 2-1 in his last three, 2-3 in his last five. He's got 4 inches of reach because he's got gorilla arms. Grappling stats and just grappling eyeball test. He's grappling is in his favor. Plus 155 underdog. Dawkins, we are officially calling a chunky guy, right?
I think he's a little bit chunky. Yeah.
Okay. I should mention we're not fat shaming. We enjoy our chunky fighters. So
I love chunky guys.
Exactly. Dan loves hashtag chunky guys. There's a sound clip for us. He's 10-3 as a pro, 9 knockouts, 2-0 in the UFC. He's won 3 straight fights. He's an inch taller, but he doesn't have the gorilla arms that Oleinik has. 12 years younger. Then his opponent's striking stats in his favor, minus 185. I'm going with the younger guy again in this one.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Dawkins on this one, too. I will say I'm not thrilled about the price tag. When I saw this fight booked, I was like, ooh, Dawkins might come in at plus money, and that would be a sweet play. And then it got posted, and I was like, oh, that's kind of disappointing. That's actually even further apart than I really wanted it. Like, I was hoping for plus money at the least. I was hoping for, like, negative 130s or something like that, and we come in damn near close to negative 200. But, you know, like, the fact of the matter is that Dawkins, in addition to being younger, has a phenomenal gas tank. You haven't had to see it very often because he does get the job done quick. But Oleinik has shown that if anything is degraded with time, it's certainly been his energy levels. Like, if you look at his win over Maurice Greene, which, I mean, he gets the armbar at the end. He looks exhausted fighting Maurice Greene, like absolutely exhausted fighting Maurice Greene. Then you talk about the fact that, you know, we've said time and time again, you start getting knocked out. That's what keeps happening. In his last 5 fights, he's been knocked out 3 times. You know, and granted, Derek Lewis, Walt Harris, and Alistair Overeem are better punchers probably than Chris Dawkins. But at the same time, we're not talking about like, oh, he's just a slightly less good puncher, he'll have a tougher time knocking him out. No, those knockouts are cumulative. And Doc is not for anything. Knocked out Parker Porter, who has got a very hard head. I like Chris Daukaus here. I like him probably as long as he survives any early grappling exchanges that should happen. And he is a black belt, too. So, like, he probably will. I think he probably finishes Olenek in the second or third round here as Olenek begins to tire and he can just kind of pour on the volume.
We may have a prop bet there. Little tease there for you. We are moving to featherweights. We'll see if Dan goes with his heart or his head here also. Charles Boston Strong Rosa versus Derek Minor. Minor 25-11 as a pro, one knockout, 22 submissions, 1-1 in the UFC. He won his last fight. He lost in the Dana White's contender series. He's 4 years younger. Striking and grappling stats in his favor. He's at +140. As for Rosa, 13-4, 3 knockouts, 8 submissions, 4-4 in the UFC. He's swapped wins and losses back and forth his whole career in the UFC. He won his last fight for what that's worth. 2 inches of height, -170. What do you think? Are you going with your Massachusetts buddy or not?
Yeah, I'm sticking with the Massachusetts guy and Charles Rosa here. I think Derek Minner probably saved his career last time out. He had back-to-back losses to kick off his career, as you mentioned. If you count Contender Series, he really lost in Contender Series, and then he lost to Grant Dawson. I think, you mentioned his really good grappling record, which is true. He is an excellent submission grappler. But sort of the problem is that, like, he concedes the takedowns because he knows he's good at grappling. So he's going to see himself on the bottom against Charles Rosa a lot. And unless you're, like, one of the very, very best 145-pound grapplers, unless you're the Bryce Mitchells of the world or, somebody of that nature, you're not going to have a good time grappling with Charles Rosa because he is a phenomenal grappler. So I think with Rosa just having the better positions all the time, I think he probably wins a decision here. I don't know necessarily if he'll be able to get Minner out, but like I do think that he's going to wind up in the better spots all the time.
Yep, agreed. Rosa is the pick. Co-main event, women's bantamweight, Ketlin Vieira, Yana Kunitskaya. We'll go with the underdog, Kunitskaya first. 13-5 as a pro, 7 knockouts, 1 submission, 3-2 in the UFC, won her last fight, striking stats in her favor. She's at +215, so quite sizable underdog here. Because Vieira is very good, 11-1 as a pro, 2 knockouts, 4 submissions, 5-1 in the UFC. She won her last fight after losing her only pro fight before that. 2 inches of height, 2 years younger, -275. It's a lot of twos. I am going with her despite 275 is quite a high number, but I'm going with her. Her only pro loss is to Irene Aldana, who knocked her out, which is a little worrisome because Kunitskaya is a bit of a striker. With 7 knockouts, but I am still sticking with Vieira. I'm not sure if I'm very keen on -275, though.
I actually am okay with the number at -275. I think she's still playable there, or maybe even hashtag throw her in a parlay, because I just don't think Yana Kunitskaya has much for her in terms of the grappling game, if it should go there. Like, her grappling defense is, like, notably not very good. If you look at her UFC stats, they call it now, but I'm going to still keep calling it Fight Metric. She gave up a couple of takedowns to Aspen Ladd. She's given up takedowns to Marianne Renault. She gets out grappled fairly easily. And we're talking about Ketlin Vieira, who not only took down Sarah McMahon, but subbed her. Subbed Sarah McMahon on the mat, which, granted, we just saw Juliana Pena do the same thing, but, like, this is also before Sarah McMahon's big long layoff when, we were thinking of her as one of the top bantamweights. She took down Kat Zingano pretty much at will as well. So, like, she's a really, really physically strong grappler. She has been my choice lately and probably for the last 4 or 5 years of the person who needs to challenge for the title. Obviously, the setback to Irene Aldana is bad, but, like, we can also talk and be pretty honest about the fact that that's probably just her getting caught in a striking exchange. It doesn't happen very often at women's bantamweight unless you're fighting Amanda Nunes. And here, I just don't think Yana Kunitskaya has got the power in her hands to put Vieira away that way. And I don't think she's got the game to either grind out a decision or sort of point fighter to a decision. So I think everything points here, Vieira, and I think in a safe enough way that I feel comfortable with that number of almost negative 300.
All right, there we go. Agreeing again. We'll see if we agree with the main event. Heavyweights. Hooray, heavyweights. We'll start with the chunky guy, Derek Lewis, who will be going up against Curtis Nipple Blades. Nipple Blades. I'm not sure if that works or not. He's 20. Lewis, the Black Beast, Mr. Entertainment. Not quite as entertaining now as he was earlier in his career. He's seems to want to actually be a real fighter now instead of just a crazy madman in the cage. 24-7 as a pro, 19 knockouts, one submission. He's won three straight fights, 15-5 in the UFC. Very impressive there. Plus 280. And I also have in my notes here that he's chunky. He's a different kind of chunky. He is like chunk. Like he's solid chunky. He's not like flabby chunky. He's a solid dude.
We don't discriminate against the different kinds of chunky. They're exactly. All chunky guys to us.
Exactly. Curtis Blades, 14-2 as a pro, 10 knockouts. His two in his record, the two losses were to Francis Ngannou, the only man who's ever beat him. He's 9-2 in the UFC, so 9-0 if Francis Ngannou doesn't exist. He's won four straight fights. He's got inch of height, inch of reach, 6 years younger than Lewis, striking and grappling in his favor. He is a ground and pound machine. He's minus 355, which is I'm going to take him, but that's for a heavyweight fight with a guy who can crack like Lewis. That's a little scary, a number that high, but I'm taking him nonetheless.
I'm taking him here. I'm actually not even worried about that price tag because I think that this is the easiest fight on the whole card to call. You know, yeah. You mentioned it's really hard to call heavyweight fights, right? But also remember that Curtis Blades is a guy who held down Alexander Volkov for 25 minutes. And they called the fight boring because they thought the fight was boring. And look at how hard it is to do something like that to Alexander Volkov because he just absolutely put it on Alistair Overeem. In addition to that, too, like we're talking about Derek Lewis, a guy who's got some comeback wins and has looked fun. And like you said, he looks interested in being an actually good fighter. But he's also a guy who gave up three takedowns to Blagoy Ivanov. He gave up three takedowns after that fight to Ilir Latifi, who is a short light heavyweight. Never mind a heavyweight. He's a short light heavyweight fighter. For those reasons, he's giving up takedowns to guys he shouldn't give up takedowns to. He's fighting the best wrestler in the division, and I stand by that statement, and I will stand by it time and time again. He is fighting a guy who is absolutely miserable to try to wrestle against. So, to me, Blades takes him down and beats the hell out of him in a round. Derek Lewis is tired, and then all we're talking about is Hail Mary haymakers, and I don't think he's on the feet long enough to throw any.
Right. Do you see this lasting long? Like, is this going to be Blades grinding out a decision victory, or is he just going to hammer fist his way to a decision, to a stoppage?
I think he's probably going to wind up with the stoppage, and here's why. Everybody sort of laughs at Derek Lewis's I just stand up defense when he's wrestling, right? Like, it's funny. He does it, and it works sometimes because he's enormous, but it's not going to work against a wrestler like Blades. And I think if he tries shit like that, the biggest issue with it is it leaves him open to be passed, right? Like in order to try that offense, you're like splitting your guard or you're loosening up your half guard or, you're sort of exposing yourself to like side control positions. If he winds up in side control or bottom mount against Curtis Blades is going to put him away, or at least is going to put enough volume on him that Herb Dean will pretend to stop it, then not stop it, and then actually stop it. So, I actually think if you're looking for a prop here, Curtis Blades to finish is probably, by TKO here is probably worth it.
All right. Do you have any other props?
I mentioned before I like Chris Daukaus to probably knock out Alexei Oleinik. If you're looking at props there, looking at him by knockout or looking at, second or third round props as well, because I think Oleinik is probably going to tire in those second and third round ones. The lines tend to be kind of juicy there. I will also say, if you're looking for a prop, Andrei Arlovsky versus Tom Aspinall goes the distance is probably a prop. Even if you don't love Arlovsky like I do, just assuming that that fight probably goes the distance due to Arlovsky's style is a prop that is probably going to hit. And it's one you're probably going to get plus money on, too, because heavyweight fights don't often do that. And even with Andrei Arlovsky's recent record, they've still been, and I don't see lines out for this yet, but they've still been lining him often that the fight does not make it to the judges' scorecard. So I'd look for that on that one. But yeah, those are my big ones there. Curtis Blaydes to finish, Chris Daukaus in probably the second or third round, and then Andrei Arlovsky and Tom Aspinall go the distance.
What a juicy episode this was. You said juicy again there, Dan.
Juicy, Jay.
You... If someone's playing a drinking game and the word's juicy, we've got someone they're probably hospitalized now for alcohol poisoning, because there was a lot of juicies in this episode. I think that's probably all the juicies we've had to say. I think you've got your money's worth of the juicy from us. Make sure you check out all my writing at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. You may even get to see Daniel Gumby Vreeland's writing there soon. You never know. And check out MMA-manifesto.com, which we both write on. We'll have lots of good stuff coming up this week for Blaydes versus Lewis, as well as a pick 'em contest. It's free to enter, and you can win good stuff courtesy of me. Make sure you follow me on Twitter. It will be Jeff Fox Writer. Dan will be Gumby Vreeland. Make sure you listen to Dan's two other podcasts where you haven't contradicted yourself recently. You're sticking your guns and picking the same fights, same winners for all the fights I see on all your podcasts now. So that would be Top Turtle MMA and Prelim Picker.
Yeah, I've been a little bit more diligent in my notes and making sure that I don't contradict myself. Because I told you, somebody called me out on Twitter on it. They were like, you told me Jordan Williams was going to win on one show, and you told me Nassadurin Imovov was going to win on another one. And I was like, Jesus Christ, that's like the last prelim to the bottom. I'm glad that you listened to me on like seven different shows, but I messed up once.
So did you say, Mom, please stop bothering me on Twitter?
I have many more followers than you.
That's true, but who else would listen to you on all your podcasts other than me and your mom? Seriously, no.
I was going to say my wife. My wife would not listen to all of these podcasts.
Our wives do not listen to it. My wife says she hears enough of it as I'm recording it. And my son thinks I yell at you the whole time, so he doesn't need to listen to it either, he says. So, which is he pretty much nailed the dynamic here. I do yell at Dan most of the time and tell him how he's wrong. So that's pretty much it. If you want to hear Dan not get belittled and yelled at, listen to Top Turtle MMA and Prelim Picker, because he's in charge of those podcasts. So he doesn't allow anyone to, although he is the one that edits his podcast here, so he very easily could take out all the times I give him slight and not so slight digs. But I guess it's too much work for a lazy guy like you, though, right?
Yeah, that is a little bit too much work, and it would also sound pretty broken, I feel like, if I did it's true that out.
It would be like those when they try to clean up the rap songs when they put them on NBA 2K and my son plays, and like, hey, this whole verse is missing in this song for some reason. But anywho, I have to come up with a good closing line. I've came up with a really good, if you've noticed past 2 weeks, I've come up with a really good opening line, which is welcome to the podcast, which is something I just came up almost, it was like in a dream of mine I came up with that line. So I do need to come up with it. Do you have a good closer that I can use, Dan?
You could just steal a Walter Cronkite or something like that.
I don't steal lines from people. What are you talking about? Welcome to the podcast is original, and I'll have to come up with an original. This is inside jokes that maybe the guy that yells at you on Twitter may know what I'm talking about here, but no one else does. So I probably should put this one to bed. So thank you for listening, and we will be back next week to tell you how smart we were and tell us on Twitter how much money we're going to win you this week, because we've got all the winning picks. So thanks for listening, and we will talk to you then.